This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is 12:03, July 15th. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us for the Monday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart today. Well, the attempted assassination of ex-President Trump has put a new emphasis on security in this year's political conventions. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, though, the events over the weekend and a look at what's happening in trading today provide a clear reminder it can be dangerous to mix politics and investing. So joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington, D.C. Mark, we know that it's not the best idea to just react to what you're seeing in the news, at least when it comes to your portfolio.
That's absolutely right. And there are two reasons for that. One is, by the time that you or I react, by the time you and I see any of the news headlines, either on the radio or on the internet or what have you as your news source, it's too late to act on it because there are so many traders on Wall Street who are following everything, not just on a second-by-second basis, but believe it or not, with their computers, they're looking at it on a less than a second basis, and they react instantly to any of the news events. And so by the time you or I react, we're probably late to the game. It means if we end up reacting the same way that they have already done, it'll be too late, and the market will bounce back in the other direction. So that's reason number one. But the other reason not to let politics and our investing mix is that we are unable to be objective when it comes to seeing what we think the implication of any political event might be. And that's shown by any of a number of psychological studies, and it's only gotten worse in recent years. You have two different people in different political parties looking at the same event, and they'll react absolutely in opposite extremes as to what they think, whether that's good or bad, whether it's going to be good for the economy, bad for the economy, and so forth. And so without that objectivity, you're just flying blind.
Well, you're flying blind there, and you can't really predict how the markets are then going to respond either. I know you mentioned that there are people who spend far more time focused on this than you or I, down to the microsecond there, but even they can't predict exactly what's going to happen next.
Well, that, of course, is a good reminder as well. That's perhaps reason number three, and the most important of all, is that we think we believe that we know what the market will do in reaction to a particular event, and it almost invariably isn't. Now, there are studies that go back and look at major geopolitical events like assassinations that go back, for example, to the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, and then, of course, the assassination of Kennedy in 1963. And there is sort of a typical pattern in the reaction to those geopolitical events. The market plunges right away, but almost as soon as after that, within days, the market has recovered. And within about, I think it's an average of around 4 to 6 weeks, the market's higher than where it was on the day that the particular event hit the market. Now, of course, we're not seeing exactly that pattern now because the market's already up today. So I don't know whether you could say the markets has learned from prior events or what have you, but trying to predict what the market will do is a fool's game.
Yeah. Now, Mark, what advice do you have then for those of us that are seeing what feels like a very shaky political climate today? Hang tight, hold on, because again, we're talking about long-term investments here. We're trying to really make strong financial decisions moving forward.
Right. It's good to put it in that context, because the only people who are really concerned about what you and I are talking about are those who are trying to trade the market. But mm-hmm. for most of us, we should be focused on the long term. And believe it or not, these events, if momentous as they may seem in the moment, have relatively little impact on the long term. If you look at what is the greatest correlate to the stock market's performance over 5 or even longer 10-20 year period of time, it's almost exclusively based on corporate earnings. And corporate earnings, you know, sounds cruel to say it, but corporate earnings don't really care about these political events.
Thanks so much for the insight, Mark Hulbert. He's an investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. We'll have an update on convention security coming up in the wake of the shooting at a Trump rally in Pennsylvania.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The deadly shooting at former President Trump's rally in Pennsylvania this weekend is shining a bright light on security at the GOP convention in Milwaukee this week, as well as the upcoming Democratic National Convention in Chicago. We're now joined by Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio national security consultant and author of the book Battle Tested, Gettysburg Leadership Lessons for 21st Century Leaders. Jeff, we have seen a growing trend of political violence. That was before the attempted assassination of former President Trump over the weekend. So what does Saturday's shooting mean for national security and the overall political climate of our country?
Well, it's obviously a moment of higher tension, higher concern. You're going to see expanded security at both the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, as well as the Democratic National Convention, which is going to be right there in Chicago. That'll begin, of course, with an effort to gain greater intelligence on specific threats. And that's really tough with a shooter like this. This kid, Thomas Matthew Crooks, 20-year-old young man from Western Pennsylvania, who appears to be what we call a classic lone wolf. If you think back to other assassinations, Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan, John Hinckley, who shot Ronald Reagan, Lynette Squeaky Fromm, who tried to kill President Ford, and more recently, the attack by a young guy against Nancy Pelosi's husband. All of these were lone wolves, and they're very hard to identify in advance and get inside their decision cycle.
Right. So there's obviously a challenge here in being proactive with those kinds of things, because you mentioned with the Butler, Pennsylvania incident, not a whole lot of red flags there prior to that incident. I do want to talk about and sort of shift gears here, because we're seeing a change in strategy from both President Biden and former President Trump, now calling for unity in the wake of Saturday's event. So what role do they play in sort of de-escalating a very polarized nation that is certainly feeling this sense of heightened political violence?
Well, I think they play a critical role right now. Unlike the other comments I made a few months ago about assassination, we didn't live in a world of social media in those days when Squeaky Fromm tried to kill Gerald Ford. And right now in social media, it's replete with accusations on both sides of the extreme political aisle on who actually is responsible for this. And that just encourages on the lone wolf side, like this kid, a copycat, quite frankly. And that also includes more organized groups that we've seen, white national groups, et cetera, who might think about retribution. And as a consequence, the words of Mr. Biden, Mr. Trump, and others need to dampen those particular efforts down and not encourage them. And sadly, we've seen a few people already at the political level making comments that I fear actually would exacerbate tensions as opposed to reducing them.
Thanks so much for joining us, Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio national security consultant. Up next, we'll take a deeper dive into the challenges of security, specifically with the Republican National Convention. We'll speak with the former chief of police in Boston.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, domestic violence in America, unfortunately, is nothing new, and the incident in Pennsylvania Saturday is just the latest reminder. So let's get a little bit of perspective from Dan Linsky. He is the former chief of the Boston Police Department and was in charge during the Marathon bombing and is now director at Kroll in Boston. Dan, you've got a lot of expertise here. You also have some experience in Secret Service. So I'm curious, you know, we know that the Trump rally shooting has shaken up security talks surrounding this week's RNC, next week's DNC. What can we expect to see security-wise?
You're going to see local law enforcement working with the agents who are going to take different roles in securing the city and the area around the convention center. The Secret Service will take the inner perimeter, where the uniform division will make sure that no prohibitive items get in. They will do what they do as far as protecting the protectees with the personal protective details, their counter-assault teams. And Secret Service from the region will work with local law enforcement, state law enforcement on the outside. And I believe they're bringing in law enforcement from other regions to come assist because of the number of resources needed. They will deal with the outer perimeter issues between protest groups and security at the different venues that the delegates are staying at, and try and coordinate all of that together to keep the city safe and the convention safe and secure.
But here's the thing, Dan. I mean, we've been previewing security measures for the this week's Republican National Convention for weeks now. And I'm curious if Saturday's event changes anything, and if not, does what makes the RNC, the Republican National Convention, is it different from the rally in Pennsylvania? And if so, logistically, how?
Oh, it's absolutely different. The rally in Pennsylvania, you know, is for a presidential candidate, right? It's not the convention. The convention is a designated U.S. Secret Service special event. Only the Super Bowl and conventions get that. Very few events get that. And there's been planning that's been going on for 4 years with groups and committee of local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies trying to figure out how they can provide the maximum security plan. So the plan for the rally was probably put together in a shorter time frame with not the same number of resources. The resources have been surged from across the country from not only the Secret Service but other federal agencies and local law enforcement agencies to make sure they've got a plan that they've been planning for literally years.
And Dan, I want to sort of tap into your past experience with the Boston Marathon bombing. Obviously, that was an event that had a lot of security preparation ahead of it. And still, we had, you know, a tragic unfolding there. I think it's just a reminder to our listeners, too, that no security is really foolproof. We're talking about all these preparations, but even what we saw on Saturday is a reminder there's a lot of variables at play.
You're absolutely right. I think it was a 146-page plan for the Boston Marathon bombing, right? Boston Marathon, and then it turned into a bombing attack. So it's not about having a perfect plan. It's about the planning process. So having teams who've looked at different challenges, who've trained together for those challenges, but who are prepared to deal with the crisis when it shows up and your plan has to go out the window. So it's not a perfect plan. It's a team that can do planning in the moment to help you with the situations that are going to come up. It's not going to go perfect. There are going to be things. There's going to be protests. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be opportunities for people to engage in violence if they want to, right? But it's having the robust folks who can then respond to that in an effective manner and having enough resources that you can be flexible and make changes as you need to on the fly.
Thanks so much. That's Dan Linsky, former police chief in Boston, now director at the firm Kroll. Still ahead, the forecast for back-to-school spending and some suggestions in our Stock Picker Monday.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart. And these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Protesters are in place as the Republican convention opens up in Milwaukee. A federal judge appointed by former President Trump makes a ruling in his classified documents case. Meantime, retailers, that is, are facing some iffy projections for back-to-school buying. And it's Stock Picker Monday, so we'll get a couple of ideas from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The Dow is up 188 points, NASDAQ up 74, the S&P 500 up 18 points. AccuWeather says it's going to be mostly sunny, our high 94 degrees this afternoon. We're watching for some heavy thunderstorms to move into the area late tonight with a low of 74 degrees. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues as protesters are gathering at a park near the Republican National Convention Plaza in downtown Milwaukee. It comes as security in the area remains tight. WBBM's Brandon Eisen is there.
Entering the RNC Plaza, a Secret Service officer in tactical gear opens a metal gate for each attendee. Attendees then walk through a series of security screenings, including a facial ID.
Step right here for me. Take your glasses off. Thanks, Brandon. You're good to go.
All right. Thank you.
Belongings are searched, each item examined. A walk through a stationary metal detector is followed by a full body pass over by a detecting wand. The entire perimeter surrounded by a metal fence about 9 feet high, the same metal fence that was used to keep crowds from entering the NASCAR Chicago Street Race last weekend. Outside the perimeter, a parade of law enforcement officers on bicycles now visible as protesters with the Coalition to March on the RNC 2024 gather in nearby Red Arrow Park. Security extremely tight, and after calls for a toning down of political rhetoric, it remains to be seen how this group, made up of mainly progressive activists, will interact with the moderate and conservative Republicans gathered here for the convention. We will continue to monitor the protest activity and the police response today and throughout the week here in Milwaukee. Brandon Eisen, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Florida federal judge Eileen Cannon has ruled in favor of former President Trump in a case involving his handling of classified documents. CBS's Scott McFarlane with the latest.
Among other things, she rules that the special counsel in that case, Jack Smith, was unlawfully appointed and unlawfully funded. In that superseding indictment against Donald Trump, the first ever federal charges filed against the former U.S. president have been dismissed.
No word yet on whether or not that ruling will be appealed.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Kolbaum, president of Kolbaum Capital Management in Orlando, Florida. And Gary, typically, historically, I should say, markets tend to dip after an attempted assassination against a president or former president. That's not the case today. What do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street?
Last Thursday, the broad market, which has been comatose all year, the Russell 2000 before last week was actually down on the year, while I believe the NASDAQ was up 20%. It woke up on Thursday. So you're getting a little bit momentum in the small and the mid cap. So you're getting a little continuation right here. Not so sure it's going to last. We're very, very what we call near term overbought. So we may settle down here. And I wouldn't use history that happened maybe just a few times to what, you know, what happened today versus in the past. The market's on its own footing right now, one way or the other.
Now, earnings season playing a big role in where the markets are headed, and that's kicking into high gear. Can you give us a preview of what's on tap here?
Well, the fundamental reason why great stocks go up are strong earnings, and a fundamental reason why bad stocks go down is poor earnings and drops in sales and earnings. So it is the most important thing we watch in the market, bar none. And supposedly, the predictions and the expectations are going to be for decent earnings and should hold up. Our job is to be just watch the market, and it'll decide for us. If we see good reactions, that'll be one thing. And then there's the other, like today, Goldman Sachs is up $6 on earnings. BlackRock's up a few dollars. That's what we hope to see. We hope to see good guidance going forward because the market looks forward, not backwards. So sometimes you could have bad numbers, but the stock goes up because they say great things ahead. I'm expecting decent numbers, nothing spectacular, but nothing I have to get too worried about at this juncture.
Gary, beyond earnings, investors also probably closely following remarks from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. What do you expect there? And what exactly is the Fed looking at?
Well, I've never been a big fan of them, but the one thing I do like about them right now is they've done nothing. They've let the free market be. And the great news is the 10-year yield, which is the most important yield, much more important than them, has gone from last October 5% down to 4.25%. And that gives tailwind to markets, the economy, mortgage business, should be better for housing, though that's another issue right now. Nothing bad happens if interest rates go lower, and so far so good. The Fed, if they decide to lower rates right here, they'd just be catching up with the free real market, and that's fine and dandy.
Now, are there any areas of the market where investors can find value right now?
I think the best is just small and mid caps as an area of the market, not necessarily a sector. Again, they have done nothing for a long while. And in comparison to the big caps, the chasm between the performance of both is the widest we have seen, bigger than the Grand Canyon. And that's why I think we're seeing them coming on. So the IWM is the Russell 2000. The MDY is the mid caps. Just keep in mind, though, if we do go into some big bear market, they'd usually get them all. But right now, definitely, money flows into those areas.
Yeah. Now, Gary, we know that politics have been dominating our news headlines. But even earlier in the show, we heard that corporate earnings don't really care about that necessarily. So I'm curious, what do you think is the biggest threat to financial markets right now?
The debt and deficits out of D.C. I hear economists say, don't worry. But when I hear that our first trillion of our tax dollars is going to towards interest, which is a complete waste. When I hear that we're going to be running $2 trillion deficits forever going forward, when I hear we're going to be at $60 trillion in 10 years, it's a worrisome sign. That is, if you ever look at the history of many countries, what brought them down was too much debt, and seems like nobody cares right now to do anything about it. So I keep my fingers crossed. I'm nuts. And they know what they're doing, but I've read a lot of history books on it, and I hope I'm wrong.
Thanks so much, Gary Kolbaum, president of Kolbaum Capital Management in Orlando. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Up next, what retailers are expecting ahead of back-to-school shopping season.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
August is just 2 weeks away. Students and parents are putting together their back-to-school shopping lists. Let's check in with Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Bob, my husband's a teacher. We're at Target the other day, and I see the back-to-school section. I said, hey, you need to get anything? He said, it is too soon. Don't bring that up. He's obviously avoiding it for other reasons, but I think a lot of parents might be waiting on it because of worrying about the dent it's going to put on their wallet this year.
Well, yeah, you know, they're saying that it's, I think it's $875 the National Retail Federation posted recently. And for some people, that's as much as their holiday budget. And on top of that, you know, a lot of teachers don't have the supplies for their classrooms. So they've got a budget they're trying to make as well. It's a lot of, that's the downside for consumers, but as a retailer, it's a great time.
Well, I'm just sure. No, but here's the thing. How much of this is tied to inflation? How much of this is just, well, now, you know, you've got to have the latest, greatest tech for your kid when they're going off to school? What's contributing to this pretty surprising cost?
Well, you know, that's a great point that they don't break it out, but the NRF said it was like $253 on average for clothes, $170 for shoes, and $300 for electronics. Well, I don't know about you, but $170 for shoes, that could be one pair these days. And so I don't know that as much of inflation as much as, you know, not saying get off my lawn, kids. But when I was a kid, you didn't get a chance. You got the cheapest shoes and get out there, right?
Back in my day, we had the TI-83. That didn't cost $300. I mean, I'm just saying we'll get off that stump. What advice do you have then for parents that are looking to get back to school shopping, looking for deals? Because we know that this is a good opportunity for retailers to maybe put a little bit of a squeeze on them.
Well, that's a great point, Rachel. And this week, you know, is Amazon's big Prime Day that they're doing for 2 days, but all of the retailers are jumping in just as much. So look for Macy's doing a whole thing this week. So is Target. A lot of other people are going to be finding ways to do it. And then the other side is, you know, if this is how much some households have for their holidays, why not ask your extended family, your grandparents and their aunts and uncles, like, you know, I could use some help here. And they would love to help. You just got to ask.
I think that's a really great point because the people who are just as happy to get your kid a birthday present are probably equally excited to help them in their academic endeavors.
Absolutely. And they'd like to see it on them. So, hey, there's all that stuff.
Thanks so much for joining us, Bob Phibbs. He's CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. You can join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, we've got our Monday Stock Picker.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And it's Stock Picker Monday. So helping us out this afternoon is Tim Grisky. He's Senior Portfolio Strategist at Ingalls & Snyder in New York. Tim, glad to have you with us. What's your first pick?
Hi, Rachel. Going to start out with United Rentals. The symbol is URI. And they make they rent construction equipment really for large construction products, new office buildings, new developments. And they dominate that industry. They have the highest market share by far in the U.S. They're certainly benefiting from the Infrastructure Act. A lot of money going into roads, bridges, highways. And they roll up all the small players in the industry. They buy them out, and so they're consolidating themselves, makes them much more efficient.
Okay, and your second, we'll recap there, because that's United sure. Rentals, the ticker URI. And then, Tim, your second pick.
Second one is back in the technology area. Can't avoid that these days. Applied Materials, symbol is AMAT. They make semiconductor equipment, the equipment that actually makes the semiconductors. So they're a manufacturer, and they make the machines that make the chips. They totally dominate this industry, and they're going to benefit from the build-out of plants, semiconductor plants in the U.S., which is just in its early days. And, you know, they benefit from the huge demand, of course, for artificial intelligence chips. So this is a strong company.
All right. Now, Tim, while I've got you here, we sort of started the show on this note. I want to end the show on this note, and that is just suggesting that it's probably best not to let politics weigh in on your investment decisions. You've mentioned these picks. I'm guessing neither of which were swayed by the weekend's events.
Exactly. No, I totally am with you on that. What moves stocks are companies doing well, growing and producing new and vibrant products. Has nothing to do with politics.
Well, we always appreciate your insight, and thanks for the picks. That's Tim Griske, Senior Portfolio Strategist at Ingalls & Snyder in New York. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want to listen to. There's even a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.